Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today we're going to be looking at a Supreme Court case that, you know, might sound a little dry at first, but trust me, it gets pretty interesting. It's Tyson Foods v. Buafakeo, and at its heart, it's all about unpaid overtime, but like on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, this case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it really dives into like how you can use statistics and data in these kinds of cases.
Okay, so set the scene for us. What exactly happened at this Tyson Foods plant?
Well, we're talking a pork processing plant in Iowa, and basically the employees were saying they weren't getting paid for all the time it took to like put on and take off all their protective gear, you know, the stuff you've got to wear in a place like that.
Yeah, the whole donning and doffing issue, I've heard that term thrown around. Seems simple enough, but I bet it gets complicated fast.
Oh, absolutely. And to make matters worse, Tyson Foods, they didn't keep detailed records of, you know, exactly how long each worker was spending on all that.
So how do you even prove you worked that extra time if no one's writing it down? That seems to be a huge problem for the workers.
It is, and that's where things get really interesting. What they did was they hired an expert who like studied a sample of the workers and figured out the average time it took to put on and take off all that gear.
Okay, so then they use that average to be like, hey, based on this, the whole group of workers is owed this much in overtime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems pretty clever.
Exactly. But Tyson Foods, they argued that this whole average thing was unfair. They said, you know, not everyone takes the same amount of time to get ready. So using an average would mean some folks who weren't really owed anything would get paid, and others who maybe deserved more might get shorted.
Yeah, that makes sense. That seems like a totally valid concern. So what did the Supreme Court say? Who they side with, the workers or Tyson?
They actually sided with the workers 6-2. And this part is really important for anyone who deals with, you know, wage and hour cases.
Okay. I'm all ears. Break it down for us. Why'd the court side with the workers?
Okay. So first they said the experts' calculations, they were reliable, like good data, solid math. But the second part of their reasoning, this is the real game changer. They basically said that because Tyson Foods didn't keep good records, the workers had no choice but to rely on these, like, estimates, you know?
So Tyson kind of shot themselves in the foot by not keeping track of things properly.
Yeah.
Makes sense why that helped the workers' case.
Exactly. It's a huge reminder to employers to keep those records accurate and up to date. And actually, this decision, it builds on a case from way back in 1946, Anderson v. M. Clemens Pottery Co.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one from law school. It was all about how if employers don't keep good time records, employees can use other evidence to estimate their hours, as long as it's like just and reasonable.
That's the one.
Right.
And Tyson Foods just reinforces that idea. It's a big win for workers who might have a hard time proving they were underpaid otherwise.
This is really interesting stuff. But one thing I'm wondering about, did the Supreme Court say anything about what should happen if, you know, the calculations accidentally give money to workers who weren't actually underpaid? Seems like that could happen, right?
You're hitting on a really important point. That's what a lot of legal folks call the uninjured class member problem. And the Supreme Court, they didn't really give a clear answer on that one. They basically left it up to the lower courts to figure out how to make sure only the people who were actually harmed, you know, they're the ones who get paid.
So kind of a gray area still.
Yeah.
But it sounds like even the Supreme Court recognized that there's a potential for unfairness there. Mm-hmm. Did any of the justices talk about that in their opinions?
Yeah, for sure. Even though Chief Justice Roberts, he voted with the majority, he wrote separately to highlight this very issue.
Yeah.
He basically said the courts, they got to figure out a way to make sure only the actual victims get the money.
Okay, so a little bit of caution there, even from within the majority. What about the folks who disagreed with the decision? What were their main arguments?
Justice Thomas, he was the one who really disagreed with the decision. His big concern was that letting this kind of representative evidence stand, you know, using those averages, it would make it too easy to file these big class action lawsuits, and companies could end up paying huge amounts even if they hadn't actually done anything wrong to everyone in the class.
Yeah, the classic argument against class actions, they can get out of control. So Justice Thomas is worried about protecting businesses from that. Did he say anything else about that?
Yeah, he basically argued that this decision, it like weakens the rules about when you can even have a class action in the first place. And he thinks it might make it too easy for employees to team up and sue, even if they don't have a super strong case.
So from his perspective, it's like this decision tilts the scales too far in favor of workers and makes it harder for companies to defend themselves.
Exactly. He's saying, look, it's important to protect workers, but you also got to be fair to businesses, right? It's tough. This case really shows how tricky it can be to find that balance.
Yeah, it's a classic legal tug of war trying to figure out how to protect both sides. This Tyson Foods case definitely throws a wrench in the whole thing.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a case with big consequences for everyone involved.
Okay, so we've laid out the background of this case, the arguments, and what the Supreme Court decided. Now, let's think about what it means for the folks listening. What are the big takeaways here?
I'd say the biggest takeaway for employees is that this case is a win. It shows that even if your employer is messing up with their record keeping, you can still fight for the wages you deserve.
And that idea of just and reasonable evidence, that seems like a powerful tool for workers, especially when their bosses haven't been keeping good track of their hours.
Absolutely. Tyson Foods really highlights how important that idea is. Employers, listen up. Accurate record keeping, that's key to protecting yourself from these lawsuits.
Right. It's like the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Keep those records in order, and you might just avoid a whole lot of legal trouble.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Now, before we get into how this case is playing out in other courts, I want to leave you with a question to think about. Do you think this decision gets that balance right, you know, between protecting workers and being fair to employers? It's a tough one. There are good arguments on both sides.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive, everyone. We're picking up right where we left off, talking about the Tyson Foods case and how it's, you know, making waves in the legal world.
Right. Last time we asked you to think about whether this decision, you know, really strikes that balance between workers and employers.
And, well, it turns out there are already some really interesting developments in the lower courts that are kind of grappling with that question. It's like this case has really stirred up a lot of discussion and debate among, you know, the legal experts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Judges all over the country are trying to figure out how to apply what the Supreme Court said in Tyson to all sorts of different wage and hour cases.
And it's getting pretty tricky because, remember, the Supreme Court didn't exactly give a clear formula for how to deal with those uninjured class members, the ones who might get paid, even though they weren't really underpaid.
Yeah, that's right. They kind of just said, okay, lower courts, you figure it out. And that has led to, well, some pretty creative and maybe even a little controversial ways of handling these cases.
Okay, this sounds juicy. Give us an example. What are some of the ways courts are trying to sort this whole thing out?
One thing we're seeing is something called trial by formula.
Trial by formula. Okay, that sounds kind of like something out of Star Trek. What is that exactly?
Well, it might sound futuristic, but it's actually becoming more and more common in these types of cases.
So how does it work? Walk us through this trial by formula thing.
It's basically a way to, like, streamline the whole process of figuring out who's owed what, instead of going through each individual worker's case, which would take forever.
Yeah, that would be a total nightmare, I can only imagine. So what's the alternative?
Well, they use a formula, often based on, like, statistical modeling, to calculate damages for the whole group, for the entire class.
So it's kind of like a shortcut, but one that uses those statistical averages that the Supreme Court said were okay in Tyson.
Exactly. Well, it's supposed to try and solve that uninjured class member problem, because in theory, if the formula is right, it should only give money to the people who actually worked the extra time.
I see. But I'm guessing this approach isn't without its critics. There have got to be some people who think it's not the best way to go, right?
You're right, there are. Some legal experts argue that trial by formula is basically trading individual fairness for efficiency, you know?
They're worried that the formula might miss some of the details of each person's case and end up giving inaccurate results.
Exactly. They're concerned that it's treating everyone the same without considering their individual circumstances.
Which could mean, as we said before, some folks are still getting overpaid and others are getting shorted. So not a perfect solution, but it's one way courts are dealing with all the complexities of this Tyson decision.
Yeah, that's right. It's a whole area of law that's still developing. And there's a lot of debate about, you know, the best way to use these statistical models so that they're fair and efficient.
Okay, so trial by formula. That's one tool in the legal toolbox. What else are courts trying?
Another interesting thing that's happening is that courts are using what are called bifurcated trials in some of these cases.
Bifurcated trials? That's a mouthful. What does that even mean?
It's not as complicated as it sounds. It basically means they're splitting the trial into two parts.
So instead of trying to decide if the employer is liable, you know, if they broke the law, and how much they owe all at the same time.
Right. They split it up. First, they have a trial just to figure out if the employer is liable. You know, did they actually violate those wage and hour laws.
And then if they decide that the employer did break the law, they have a whole other trial to figure out how much they have to pay.
That's the idea. And this whole bifurcated trial thing can be really helpful in cases that involve statistical evidence, like we're seeing after Tyson Foods.
I see, because it lets the court focus on the big picture first. You know, was there actually a problem with how the employer was tracking hours?
Exactly. They can really dive into the expert testimony and those statistical models and decide whether there's enough evidence to say that, you know, the whole class of workers has a valid claim.
And only if they decided there was a problem, then they move on to figure out how much each individual worker should get.
Right. And at that point, they might even be able to figure out who those uninjured class members are and make sure they don't get any money.
So it's a way to address that concern that Chief Justice Roberts raised, you know, about making sure that only the people who are actually harmed get paid. Bifurcated trials, they sound like they give the courts a lot more control over the whole process.
That's right. It lets them really look at the big picture and the little details, which is important in these cases.
So we've got these two main approaches, trial by formula for efficiency and bifurcated trials for more, you know, careful damage calculations. For our listeners out there, what's the main thing they should take away from all of this?
I think the big takeaway is that this Tyson Foods case, it's created both opportunities and challenges when it comes to these class action lawsuits, especially when you're talking about wages and hours.
It's definitely given workers a powerful new tool, right?
Yeah.
They can use statistical evidence to fight for what they're owed, even if their employers haven't been keeping good records.
Absolutely. It's like the Supreme Court is telling employers, look, if you're not going to keep track of things properly, you're going to have to deal with the consequences.
Yeah, that's a good point. But at the same time, these cases are becoming even more complicated and technical, and potentially, you know, they could drag on for a lot longer as the courts try to figure out all these new legal issues.
It's true, and that's why having a good lawyer is more important than ever in these situations.
Yeah, you need someone who really understands how this Tyson decision works and how to fight back against, you know, statistical evidence that might not be so solid.
Exactly. Whether you're an employee who thinks you've been wronged or an employer who's trying to figure out how to stay on the right side of the law, you need a lawyer who can help you understand what's going on and what your options are.
Well said. We've covered a ton of information here. Before we move on to the final part of our deep dive, where we'll get into some really practical tips for both sides, All right, we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Tyson Foods v. Bua Fakeo. So far, we talked about what happened in the case and, you know, how courts are trying to apply it. And now we want to get down to brass tacks. What does all of this mean for employers and employees? You know, like, what can they actually do to protect themselves after this decision?
Well, let's start with employers. If there's one thing they should take away from Tyson, it's that keeping really good records, I mean, meticulous records, is absolutely essential.
Yeah, we've talked about that a few times already, but it's worth repeating, I think. Tyson Foods, they really messed up by not having those detailed records of their employees' time, and it really came back to bite them.
Absolutely. The Supreme Court basically said, look, if you don't have those records, we're much more likely to let workers use statistical evidence, even if it means there's a chance some people will get overpaid. So employers, if you're listening, now's the time to double check your timekeeping systems.
Yeah, make sure everything is up to date, accurate. You know, make sure all your managers know how to use the system properly.
And don't just assume everything is working fine. You got to check those records regularly and make sure everyone's hours are being tracked correctly. Remember, a little bit of effort up front can save you a huge headache down the road, especially when it comes to these lawsuits.
Couldn't agree more. So good record keeping, that's one thing. What else can employers do to protect themselves in light of this Tyson decision?
Another really important thing is to be ready to challenge any statistical evidence that's brought against them. We mentioned Daubert challenges earlier, and those are becoming super important in these kinds of cases.
For anyone who doesn't know, a Daubert challenge is basically a way to question whether the scientific evidence, in this case the statistics, you know whether it's actually reliable and accurate. It's kind of like saying, hold on, let's make sure this expert knows what they're talking about.
Right. And if an employer can successfully challenge those statistical models or the data that's being used, they might be able to stop the case from becoming a class action altogether.
Or at least limit how much they might have to pay out in the end. So employers, pay attention, keep good records, and don't be afraid to question the statistics. That's how you stay ahead of the game in this new legal landscape.
Now let's switch gears and talk about what employees can do to protect themselves. First of all, if you think you're being denied overtime pay, don't be afraid to speak up.
Know your rights. The Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, that's the law that protects your right to get paid for every hour you work, and that includes time spent getting your gear on and off.
And if you think your employer isn't tracking your hours correctly, start keeping track of it yourself, you know, in detail. Write down when you clock in, when you clock out, anytime you're working off the clock.
Yeah, those notes can be really important if you decide to take legal action.
Yeah.
They can back up what you're saying and give you a timeline of when those violations happened.
And speaking of legal action, if you're thinking about joining one of these class action lawsuits, talk to a lawyer who specializes in this kind of stuff in wage and hour cases.
Yeah, you need an expert on your side, someone who really knows how to use this Tyson decision to your advantage and can walk you through the whole process.
Exactly. So whether you're an employer trying to stay in compliance with the law or an employee trying to get what you're owed, the Tyson Foods case has definitely changed the rules of the game.
It really makes you think about how the law is always evolving, you know, and how important it is to stay informed. Hopefully this deep dive has given everyone listening some valuable information about how to navigate this new legal world.
And remember, making informed decisions, that's always the best strategy, whether you're in the boardroom or the courtroom.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this journey, everyone. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive, where we'll keep exploring the fascinating world of law and how it impacts all of our lives.